I'd like to begin today's meeting. Thank you very much for coming. Let me do a brief introduction. I'm really excited about today's program because I think in Hawaii, you know, we face many different kinds of problems, you know, as time passes. Right now, the legislature is in session. They're trying to solve problems their way. But very often, individuals or groups, you know, they really need to do something. You want to do something, or something makes you angry. You need to make a change. And it's hard to do. It's hard to know how to get started. But here we are in Hawaii with a more compact community. And fortunately, we have our own very inventive, very progressive ways of making sure that good things can happen. We have two representatives today, two different approaches. What you're going to hear today is a way that you or your organization can think about as a way to get started doing something that's of valuable value to the community. It's still paperwork, or in one case, but we're not talking about a big foundation, you know, that's concerned with representing its founders. We're talking about people who are sympathetic, who live in the community, know the community, and been spending a lot of time making things happen. So, two speakers. I'm going to ask the panelists to please come up to the panel table. I'm going to try for an introduction, but I'd like them to introduce themselves, you know, both personally and what they do. Nancy Alec is the executive director of the Hawaii People's Fund, a publicly supported community foundation established in 1972 to provide grants to progressive grassroots social change organizations. I've cribbed this from their website, obviously, working in Hawaii. Our philosophy of community-based strategic philanthropy offers a unique alternative to traditional charitable giving. Samantha Ruiz organizes Honolulu Soup. It's, Honolulu Soup is a micro-granting dinner meeting which supports creative projects in Honolulu. At that event, attendees eat, talk, they eat the soup, you know, talk, share resources, enjoy art, and vote on the project they think benefits the city the most. Obviously, I cribbed this from their webpage. At the end of the night, the organizers will collect the ballots, and the winner goes home with all of the money raised to carry out their project. Imagine that. So if you learn to pitch, if you learn to convince people what you're doing is valuable, besides in your head, you can get started. There's magic at this table. I want to now speak less, turn the microphone over. Let's do Nancy first, and then, and the time is free form. Please take what you need and allow for the other person.
Do you mind if Samantha goes first? Hmm? Do you mind if Samantha goes first?
Hello? Hello? Hello. Hi, everyone. My name is Samantha Ruiz, and I want to thank Nancy and Larry for both inviting me to this panel. I actually wasn't aware of your organization and mission, and I'm really excited that I'm here to talk to you all about Honolulu Soup and how your organization can potentially get involved, or if you know of different projects that might benefit from this model, you know, encourage people to engage in this process. So I'll start with my history and kind of why I brought this model here to Honolulu. I moved to Honolulu about a year ago, actually last April, and I had an environmental nonprofit called IDEAS. IDEAS stands for Intellectual Decisions on Environmental Awareness Solutions, and our mission is to educate, engage, and empower students and community members in environmental sustainability work. And when I moved here, I actually, I applied for a grant through the Hawaii's People Fund to do to go to New York City for the largest climate march in the history of the world. I think it was over 40,000 people took the streets of Manhattan. And I ended up not getting the grant, and I spoke to a couple of people, and they said, you know, this organization supports projects that support Honolulu, that support Hawaii and what Hawaii is doing, because we are in a place where self-sufficiency and local connectivity is so valued. And so I started thinking and started kind of looking at the landscape of projects that were taking place here, and I noticed that a lot of the environmental work was was already being met. There's so many groups doing really wonderful projects here in Honolulu. And as a newcomer, I wanted to support those efforts without impeding on someone else's mission. So in my mind, I was thinking, how do you add value to this place without overstepping someone else's work? And it wasn't my idea. It was a model that started in Detroit in 2009. And they hosted it on Super Bowl Sunday. They had a total of 10 people in this small attic, all donate $5 and had three presenters pitch a project. To date, there's over 179 different soup models that take place all over the country, and they've raised about $180,000 in grassroots funding. So, recognizing the potential behind this idea and kind of tapping into this network of crowdfunding, real-time crowdfunding, I said, well, why don't we host a soup here in Honolulu? The first soup took place on November 14th. We had about 50 people attend, and we ended up financing an urban farm in Kaka'ako with about $500. And to date, well, we've actually raised over $2,000. The second one, we raised $1,100 for a company called Pono Soap that donates all of their proceeds to homelessness in Honolulu. And then the third one, we raised about $1,000 to, the participants decided to give that pot of money to an efficiency company to do retrofits in low-income houses. They partnered with another organization called Kanu. I think I'm getting a little in the weeds about it, but essentially the model works where people attend, you pay $12, 10 of that 12 goes into a community chest, 2 of the 12 goes to support the local chef. So what I try to do is find chefs that are trying to get their name out there in the community, that are starting up, don't really have a big membership base or a community to tap into, and they agree to make a vegan or vegetarian soup for the community, try to hit everybody's needs in that sense. And then participants, once you pay the $12, you get soup, bread, and a vote. Throughout the evening, you listen to three participants pitch their project for 6 minutes. So there's three rules. One, no technology, so no presenter is allowed to use any type of PowerPoint, iPad. It's very raw, kind of. You need to get up in front of the room and convince people why your project is the best. You can use props. So say, like, for instance, a woman for Pono Soap, she brought her soap so that people could actually smell the soap, see what it's made of, and kind of get a real idea of where that money would go. So there is no technology, rule one. Rule two, you have 6 minutes. And rule three is you have to answer four questions from the community. So the format of the event is similar to this seating arrangement here. And the hope is that people collaborate with each other after you hear these pitches to think about, okay, we have four questions to ask this project. What are the four best questions to kind of validate this project and ensure that our vote is going to the project that will benefit Honolulu in the best way possible? So that's really the gist of it. It's very simple. I think that soup is a perfect meal choice, because you can make a bunch and it goes a really long way. It serves a lot of people. It's very communal in the sense that, I think any meal is very communal. When you get people sitting down at dinner, the exchange of ideas is just, I think it's just a natural byproduct of that. I think I'll stop there. I think that's about it. Do you want to go and then we'll take questions or... Yeah? Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Aloha, I'm Nancy. I did go to one of the Honolulu soup, I think the middle one, the second one, and it was very, very exciting and electric atmosphere. So I would recommend that you folks check it out, if nothing else. I want to thank Cocoa Council for inviting me to be here. I haven't really come to, I don't think, any meetings like this, but I have gone to, like, when you do the legislative wrap-up. I've always been really impressed with the work that Kōkuku Council does, so happy to be here. I know a few people in here, mostly through various forms of activism we've connected. And it was interesting to hear Samantha remind me that she had applied for a grant from Hawaii People's Fund and didn't get it, and yet it actually helped her think through things more clearly. And I will say that's one thing that happens a lot with our organization, because we respect so much the time and effort that people put into completing a proposal, thinking through the work they're doing. And even if they don't get it, sometimes they actually write in their proposal, I learned so much about what I'm doing and how to articulate it, that even if I don't get funded, I appreciate filling out this application. And I don't think too many funders get that kind of feedback. But we're not here to compare ourselves to other foundations. We just are what we are. And Larry gave a pretty good introduction of what we do, and we've been around for like 43 years now. We fund groups that are mainly too small or too new and often too controversial to be able to get any kind of mainstream funding. But we do have rules also. Even Honolulu Soup has some rules. We have some rules too. We really look carefully at the level of thoughtful planning that's in an application, because if it's not there, it doesn't make sense to throw money at something that's not ready for the money yet. Plus, we do have to work really hard to raise every dollar that we give out. We look for applications that have a reasonable budget, that have work with marginalized constituencies, and have inclusive leadership. We have a very democratic process that spends a lot of time respectfully and holistically going over each application. And then we look at how much money we have and see what we can do. I'm actually personally not part of that decision-making process, but we have a committee made up of community activists who represent the same kind of interests as our applicants. So it's a very peer-based, activist-run grant-making process. We do work really closely with the people that we give money to, our grantees, because we want to support them in other ways than just giving money. I think initially when I came to the job about 12 years ago, we were pretty much just giving grants. But I realized, and I see other foundations around the country are also realizing this, that if you just give money and you don't give any other kind of support, sometimes you're actually doing more harm than good. So we try to really engage with our grantees, see what other kinds of support that they need. And one thing that we work hard at is creating opportunities for them to come together and meet each other, meet other community organizations, and the kinds of self-generated collaborations that come out of that is really inspiring and very useful for the work. And I think Kōkuku Council, in all the partnerships that you weave, understand how important that is to not work in isolation. And then, as Larry mentioned, we are a grassroots organization ourselves. One of our rules is we primarily, although we're not super strict about it under certain circumstances, will fund only groups that have a budget of $250,000 or less. And we ourselves fall in that rank. So I brought our Z card, and they're up on the front desk. So you just pull the two cards apart. And you can see all the groups that got funded last year. Our fiscal year ends on June 30th, so I'm going to have to make a new one. So please take this one. So I don't have a lot of old ones left when I have to make a new one. But I think it's useful to see the kinds of, the diversity of activism that is happening in Hawaii, and we only fund in Hawaii. If you think about any successful advocacy program that you know about, especially here in Hawaii, probably it began as an idea around a kitchen table, late night at Zippy's, drinking beer in somebody's carport. You know, it starts out with zero resources, or maybe what people can pull out of their pockets or get from friends and family. And there are some great organizations in Hawaii now that got their start with some funding from the People's Fund. They were very edgy, and we tend to work with edgy groups, but we don't want these groups to remain edgy. These are ideas that are so important that they're not recognized yet, and they're seen as edgy, but we want what's seen as out in left field, literally left field, to move towards the center and become embraced by more and more people. That's what we all want. We don't want to be out on the periphery of things. So there's a continuum of funding for advocacy. And I think a project could start with a crowdfunding kind of idea where there's some rules, but it's really looking to support a good idea. And Honolulu Soup is one of them. There, you know, Larry mentioned them. There's other ones too, not a lot, but some, that can really give great support to a new burgeoning idea. Once that takes flight and can kind of get some traction, then the People's Fund might be the kind of place for greater funding. Our grants are only up to $5,000, so it's not huge, but when you're just starting, $5,000 actually can go a long way. And then more sophisticated, if you really get some infrastructure going, then you can start looking at larger foundations and even government grants. So it's a process that not everybody goes through. Some people stay very grassroots forever, but there are different opportunities that you can come into. A lot of people think that you can't get funding for advocacy. How many people think that maybe you can't get a grant if you're doing advocacy work? Nobody in this room thinks that. Good. Oh, one person. Because advocacy, if you're doing lobbying or political direct campaign work, then it can't be funded. You know, that's not a nonprofit. It doesn't work within a nonprofit framework. But advocacy itself is much, much broader. So it can be education. It can be research. You can have community dialogues and meetings like this. It takes some money to keep these kinds of groups going. And those are the kinds of community action that are very fundable. If there are ever any questions that you have about what counts as advocacy that cannot be funded and what can be, there's a Alliance for Justice organization. It's a national organization. They have a very good website, afj.org. And they talk a lot about doing advocacy work and what you can do that will be totally fine with the IRS, etc. So I think, you know, at this point, the best thing we can do is answer your questions and maybe hear a little bit from folks who are working on projects that need funding so we get a sense of who's in the room as well.
Questions? I have a memory of something that I think this was the People's Fund many years ago. I'm not sure. But in addition to People's Fund's own grants, I believe that you also supported organizations that, while doing wonderful work, did not have the business expertise to handle the financial aspects, and that People's Funds would accept a donation on behalf of the agency or a group and then handle all of the financial parts of it for a very, very reasonable part of that grant. And I'm wondering, you're nodding, so I think I'm correct.
I know what you're talking about, and I think it's an important thing for everybody to understand that if you get a grant, most foundations, People's Fund is not one of them. We will support a group that is not technically a 501c3, but most foundations need to be signed up with the state and the IRS to be a nonprofit. So what Nanette is talking about is called fiscal sponsorship, and if you don't have that 501c3 status and you want to apply for a grant where they require that, they generally will accept a fiscal sponsor. My guess is Kukui Council probably has 501c3 status, so perhaps if there was a project that was related and came to Kokua Council to ask for fiscal sponsorship, you folks might agree to do that or not. It's not necessarily a simple thing. It comes with a lot of responsibility and liability. So we have done it. In a sense, when we give a grant to a group that doesn't have 501c3, we become their fiscal sponsor. But we try not to do it too much because of the liability and responsibility and our own infrastructure. It puts more burden on us to carry on all the financial duties. So we have done that. We've received grants for other people, but we don't like dole out like, oh, come to us with all your receipts and we'll give you the money to reimburse you, or we'll pay your checks for you. We don't have the time to do all that. And our bookkeeper is part, you know, is just like on contract. So she certainly is not going to do it without charging us a lot more money. But fiscal sponsorship can be a very significant help for groups and not needed at all, I think, if you go to Honolulu Soup. Because you get cash.
We're looking for fiscal sponsorship.
Yeah.
First of all, Sam, how do we get in contact with you and know when the next soup is?
Yeah, So
the next soup will actually take place on May 13th, and it's going to be hosted at Kaka'ako Agora, which is a community space right off of Cook Street. I'm pretty sure, yeah, Cook Street.
Urban Park.
Yeah, and you can get in. You can get in contact with me. My email is samantha@ideasforus.org. But for one to submit a project for Honolulu Soup, it's not technically paperwork, but it's e-work. There's a short Google form online that you can fill out, and it asks three basic questions. One, what's your project? Project summary. Two, how does your project benefit the city of Honolulu? And three, how do you plan to use the funding? So just kind of a general overview of your thought, your idea, and how to move it forward.
So your email is the only way to find out about future soups?
We have a Facebook. We do have a Facebook. We're in the process of launching our website, which will be hnlsoup.org.
hnlsoup.org.
Mm-hmm. We do have a Twitter as well. That's just hnlsoup. And I'm trying to think of any other places. Facebook. The newsletter, if you'd like, I can send around a sheet and you all can put your email on a list and I can put you on our newsletter list. And, you know, I was going to say something else. You know, the intention of soup was for people. It's very similar. When you're talking about Hawaii People's Fund, a lot of your speech resonates with me because soup was created so that people without 501c3 status could actually apply for funding, because there is such a process to go through when it comes to grant making or you know, getting your proposal together, dotting your I's, crossing your T's, and we wanted to really cut out the red tape for a lot of those projects, and because I think a lot of the reason why people are not so inspired to take action is because of the red tape that is in place. And so, we hope that soup is a platform for people to feel good about their project and not lose momentum just because the funding isn't accessible.
Okay, thanks. Now, question to Nancy, quick. Right? Yeah, I know you funded Common Cause. Common Cause has been around for a long time. So I'm wondering if that was a project of Common Cause, and then putting in the context of like Kokua Council, if we wanted to hire somebody part-time to put on forums and do all the logistics, right? Is that the sort of thing you would fund?
Okay, so first, as I said, I don't make the decisions. So it kind of liberates me from getting blamed if I say yes and then you don't get it. But the main thing is we support groups that are trying to create progressive social change and working for justice in Hawaii. That covers a lot of territory, and our grants, if you look at the Z card, I hope everybody takes one, are very, very diverse. So in the last year, we gave a grant to Pacific Tongues, which is youth poetry. And we gave a grant to Common Cause, which on the one hand has been around for a long time, even in Hawaii. On the other hand, really was pretty dormant for a long time. And our support has been very important to helping them rebuild a presence in Hawaii. The kind of activities that they do and the way that they do it, the openness with which they operate, all meet our expectations and requirements and guidelines and the things that people look at. So that's why they've been receiving support. And I would think that that holds exactly true for Kōkua Council. I don't believe that your budget is probably over $250,000. And my suggestion that I've been giving more and more, it's not required, is that when a group like yours operates with so many important programs and reasons for being, not to come in for a specific project. Don't come in and say, we need money to hire a person to do X, Y, and Z, but say, this is who we are, this is what we do, this is why it's important. These are the expenses we anticipate in the coming year, and we would like general support for our work. And you can include that with which you think you're going to need funding for, but on the one hand, it frees you up to not have to do that if circumstances change, as they often do. So maybe 6 weeks down the line, you find what you really need is something else rather than what you asked for. It's still okay when you get general operating. And the other point is that, you know, the more progressive foundations are really looking to do mostly, if not totally, general operating support, which means we believe in what you do and we trust you to decide the best way to expend the funds we're giving you. You don't have to tell us very specifically you're going to do A, B, and C and then report to us at the end of the year if you did A, B, and C or not. So does that help? Okay.
Hey. Thanks, guys. This is a question for both of you. Nancy, you mentioned that you guys have made a concerted effort to follow up with the grantees. So it's not just here's the money, you know, go to it, and then you never know what happened to it. So for both of you, how does that process work? What criteria are you using? And then can you be a repeat grantee? So what and then what kind of thing would dismiss you from being a repeat or would help you get money again?
Okay, thank you. As far as getting funding more than once, we don't, a lot of foundations that support general operating also like to look at multi-year funding, but because our resources are very finite and dependent on what we can raise, we don't promise multi-year funding because we don't know what we're gonna have. But we are very open to supporting an organization, not for many, many, many years, because we wanna see groups grow to find their own sustainability. But we definitely have done repeat funding. And the first part of your question, what exactly do we do to reach out to our grantees and how does that work? There's a number of ways and it's always evolving. So as I mentioned, we do training and networking. Sometimes we'll have things that are specifically only for our grantees. Sometimes we give a premium opportunity for our grantees to sign up before we open it to the broad community. But one thing we've been doing for about 8 or 9 years now is every year we have an expo. And we bring all of the grantees from the previous year who've had time to get some work under their belt. And we invite the community and there's a whole expo set up so people can actually visit with, learn from, and see the grantees.
Yeah, so you touched on two things, one follow-up criteria and then second repeat funding. I'll start with criteria and follow-up. So, you know, I think another component of SOUP is re-engaging and re-sparking this concept of trust in a society. And so the way that we do that is the winner of each soup then becomes a part of a board that is responsible for selecting the next project. So it's not just me behind a computer looking at these projects that we get in submission. It's, okay, there's a representative from the first, second, and third soup who then comes to discuss what are the projects that we want to see in the next soups from here on out. So that's how we kind of follow up. We also ask that each representative comes back to the soup to report back on how they use the funding. So, you know, we're holding the recipients of the funding accountable to the community, not so to the organization, but to the people that are sponsoring it to say, hey, we trust you enough. Here's this community pot. Come back, and the least you could do is give us an update, you know, showing that you've made some progress on the project rather than a flight to Vegas. You know, I mean, the checks and balances are limited, but I think that they require people to take it a little bit more seriously than if that wasn't in place. And then in terms of repeat funding, the initiative right now, we are an initiative, we're not a 501c3, we've been entertaining the idea of a more structured model, but we're so new that I don't think that the opportunity for repeat funding is there quite yet. We have had discussions with different organizations to potentially partner. I would love to explore the idea of maybe a partnership between Soup and Hoist People Fund to see if there's a way that we can, you know, I think Soup serves as an incubator for startup projects. And then is there a way to then take the project that has won and maybe pass it along to other foundations that would be willing to support their mission? And then similar to the showcase that you all do, we've been in talks of hosting a Soup for Soup, where the recipients of 5 soups would then come back and give an update about their project, what they've done, and proceeds would either be allocated to the projects that have won or be internalized to support Soup's operating costs, because right now it is all out of pocket. So, yeah.
It would be great also I want you to ask your question, but I'd love to hear from you guys what projects you might be working on that you are thinking about trying to get funding for.
So I just wanted to first of all thank you for the work that you do. You and Hoist is really fun.
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody hear me?
Okay.
Yeah, just wanted to thank you for all the work that you do and Hoist People's Fund. It's just glancing over the various causes. You know, you're really providing the resources and the funds for those individuals and causes that have the least amount of agency in our community, and so. It's great to see an organization lasting over 40 years with that type of work. I just wanted to learn a little bit more about who is the funder, or are the multiple individuals that are funding White People's Fund, and we'll just like for you to touch upon sort of the best success story that you all have, and you know, maybe not over the past 40 years, but at least within the past decade or 5 years.
Larry mentioned fundraising is hard work. It is. There's a lot. I never thought I would end up doing any fundraising. I worked with organizations that had fundraisers, and I actually remember saying to one, I could never do that. And here I am. I fell into this job where I have to do it. But we don't. Our funders are the people who believe in what we do. And our responsibility is to try and get the word out about what we're doing so more people want to give us money. We just held a fundraising campaign, and I actually broke down, it was like a month-long campaign, and I broke down the dollar amounts of donations. There, probably the majority of them were at the $50 level. So we have a number of modest donors. We don't have connections to very many high-level wealth donors. And a better fundraiser than me would be seeking them out, but I tend to be a grassroots kind of person anyway, and I'd rather have a lot of... I'd rather have a broad base than just a few people that are giving us huge amounts of money. Although I wouldn't turn it away. most, unless it came from Monsanto or something. So yeah, I think does that help answer the question? And then I don't know, one success story. It's hard to say. I mean, we had this campaign. We were trying to get $10,000. We were using our email blasts and Facebook, and we had a print mail, and we got about 8,400. So I'm happy. We had raised enough money during the year that we felt we could match up to 10,000. So we matched the 8,400. We had some other money that we had raised, and one pocket of money from a grant that we were able to use for regranting, which is unusual. So we ended up, we're just about to announce our spring grants, and it was just about $34,000 in total. So, I mean, for a grassroots organization, that feels like a success to be able to raise and give out that much money.
Sam, actually, you did really answer the question I had, which is, how do you fund Honolulu Soup when $2 of the $12 goes to the chef and 10 goes to the recipient, the winner? But it's honestly, it sounds to me as if what you're doing now would be a perfect People's Fund grant application. just the kind of thing that I think People's Fund would be to cover the operating costs, yeah. Including, I assume you have other sources of income, but do you see this as something that would go beyond once a month or every other month venue to the point where it would require at least part-time paid work for you or something like that?
Yeah, we're swimming in the same pool of consciousness right now because actually for the past 2 weeks. I work for UH. I do energy work for the university, working on energy efficiency and renewable energy projects for the campus. So this initiative really has just started, on my pastime. And right now we do not have any type of outside income. All of the operating costs is coming out of my pocket. So in terms of locations, bread, anything to support the soup, getting bowls so people when they show up will have a reusable bowl. We try to keep the event as zero waste as possible. That's all coming out of my pocket right now, but I've been in the process for the past 2 weeks of creating a proposal to submit to funders because we have actually received incredible feedback from other communities. Right now we have someone interested on the North Shore who wants to host the North Shore Soup. We have someone on Maui that's interested in starting a Maui Soup. We have someone on the west side that wants to start a soup. And then the Hawaii Food Policy Council has just partnered with us. And at their annual convention, we're going to be hosting a soup specifically for ag-focused projects. So we're starting to diversify in a couple of different ways. One, by regions throughout the islands, and then also by topics of interest. So we're thinking about supporting an energy-focused soup, an ag-supported soup, all these different kind of ranges. And so I think that actually provides a really good platform for different types of funding to come in. And so that we're not kind of carving out one path to only fund the soup to say, okay, a foundation can support operating costs. But now it's like, if you're a funder on Maui that wants to support a soup in your community, these are the different options that you can have. You can either match what the community raises, or you can pay for the location cost, or you can pay for other operating costs that are required to make the event run. So my brain's been definitely moving on how, ideally it would be amazing if there was a way to be supported to do this work full-time or part-time, because there is a lot that kind of falls through the cracks just because I am doing this purely on volunteer time and with volunteers. So that process is taking shape. Whether or not that comes true, who knows? I think that there's a lot of potential for it, and it seems like we're getting some good community interest right now. So hopefully that will happen really soon.
Let me ask a question about something we couldn't cover in the panel today, which is microloans, which is a totally different thing. And I wonder if either of you know what's going on in Hawaii, just briefly, you know, in the microloan world, like what is a microloan, what is it good for, and what's happening? Do you know about that part of the world?
I know. If any of you have any other information, you could maybe correct me, but I used to work for a CDFI. It stands for Community Development Financing Institution, and they focus primarily on providing small-scale loans with lower interest rates to families. The organization I was working for specifically funded energy efficiency and renewable projects for low-income to moderate-income families. I know that OHA has something called the Malama Loan Program.
Actually, the organization I work for, Green Wheel Food Hub, has been the beneficiary of a microloan from a wonderful organization called Feed the Hunger. And Feed the Hunger operates internationally, but also in Hawaii, with microloans for food, and particularly food justice and food sustainability related issues. They're amazingly wonderful people to work with, and really we had a great experience with them. If you wanted to get in touch with them, I can give you the contact later.
I think between the two that were mentioned, it kind of points out that micro lending generally has a very niche area. And so I think probably within the niche that you're working in, you could begin an inquiry rather than at a broader level. So if you're doing something within the agricultural and food policy arena, then Feed the Hunger might be a good source. If doing some with the Hawaiian community, can check out OHA. I think there's a couple other Hawaii groups. Pacific Gateway Center, I think, may have some microloans that they do, probably also related to either new businesses set up by immigrants. So, you know, I think within a niche area, you can start asking around, but it might be harder to find if you just look broadly.
I also have a comment on the crowdfunding thing. It's the one that everybody thinks of is Kickstarter, which, I mean, people have done really well with Kickstarters. But the way Kickstarter works is if you do not reach your goal within the stated time, you do not get any funding. There are other similar groups such as Indiegogo, where you get whatever is raised. So if your goal was $50,000 and you raise $35,000, you will still at least get that $35,000.
They will take their own percentage.
Yeah, oh, yeah, sorry, that's the, yes, that is the other thing. All of them get a percent of whatever is donated. So it pays to look into the various possibilities there if that's the way you wanted to go. Oh, yeah. And if you are considering doing anything in that Kickstarter or Indiegogo, et cetera, type, if you are not very active in social media, you will fail. Absolutely. You have to be very aggressive in your social media marketing to do well with this.
And I think the other piece, too, is a sense of urgency. So when people got arrested up at Mauna Kea last week, within 24 hours, about $15,000 was raised on one of those crowdfunding sites, maybe GoFundMe or Indiegogo. The Revolution Bookstore, which is a very far-left radical organization, tried for the first time an online funding, and they were hoping to get $10,000, and they actually surpassed it. And they, you know, it wasn't so much because they're totally whizzes at social media, but people shared it and people responded. So, it was time sensitive. So that sense of urgency often makes a big difference. And People's Fund, we're raising money year round, and that makes it a bigger challenge for us to try and look sexy and urgent all the time, and it can become really tiring.
Speaking of urgency, there, I understand there are a couple crowdfunding campaigns started to support Nepal, which is really urgent, but watch out, because you don't know if you're contributing to that, if it's really going to get to Nepal at all. So to me, kind of, if it's a small amount of money, okay, it's not such a personal risk, but you really need to know what it is, the people you're giving the money to, you know, if it's legit or not. I hate to say that, but every one of these emergencies, earthquakes, storms, somebody comes up collecting money and it never gets there.
One way I decide if something is kosher or not to contribute to, when I was listening to the stuff on Nepal, it said that Oxfam was doing this. And that's one charitable organization, and I get things from them all the time and throw them, and I thought, oh, they're doing this in Nepal. So then I will support them if I can, because I know they're mentioned as doing something. And also do listen to other things. There's another one that supports a lot. Name doesn't come to me right now, but it will. But that's the thing I listen for on the news, who's doing what for who.
I think that disaster, some people call it disaster porn or something. You do have to be really careful. Even organizations in good standing that are well known nationally don't necessarily help the places they say they're going to help, because so much goes into their own infrastructure. So I won't mention the name of one, but we got involved in helping to support after the typhoon in the Philippines, and the group decided they wanted to support this one national organization. And there are days where we get two or three pieces of mail a day from them, and it's just kind of overkill and not necessarily the best one. So, you know, relationships, knowing who it is. I think Civil Beat has something today written by a student at HPU who's from Nepal, and he even said, make wise choices when you donate, and he put a link of where to look for the organizations that are really on the ground doing the most good.
You know, the Hawaii Community Foundation is, I assume there's some ideological overlap of what they might fund and what you might fund. I assume there's a bureaucratic difference. Could you kind of explain to us where you see yourself vis-a-vis the Community Foundation, and where would you go for you, and where would you go for them, even if you're looking for the same amount? So, say I wanted $3,000 or something.
30 or 3? 3.
Yeah. I might go to you. It sounds like it's in your range. I might go to the Community Foundation. Why would I go to you or them if it was for the same project?
I wouldn't necessarily recommend one over the other. If you're doing something that's kind of radical, then you may be more likely to get funding from People's Fund, because that's what we look for. And sometimes that will stand in the way of the Community Foundation supporting something. Most of their funds, although not all of them, are donor advised funds. And so they have to meet the realities and expectations of the people who put the money there, whether they're still alive or not. You know, they'll have left a kind of legacy, like, we want to support children on Kauai, then you cannot go to them for doing something at Kakua Foundation and Council in Honolulu. But that being said, they are getting, right now they're really flexible in their grant making, because they're doing flex grants, what they call that. So they're giving general operating funds as much as possible. That's their main funding. And when you apply, they will look at all the different funders that they have and see what the work you're doing, where it meets in that list of funders, and see if they can match them up and give general support rather than for a particular project. We did partner with them at one time. They came to us and said, we love what you're doing. It's direct community support. We always wanted to do that. We never did it well. We want to partner with you, but we can't just give you money to give away, because our board of directors has to approve every grant. So for about 5 years, I think, we had a co-granting program with them, and our grant makers would decide who to fund. They would look at that list and see if they would want to put added money into any of those. But when they moved into flex granting, they ended that relationship, not with any acrimony at all, but they just were moving on. But they did give us a flex grant at the end of last year, so we're really happy to have some operating money ourselves.
Let me ask two questions, because time is running out, so I could take advantage of having the mic. One is, how do you get funded? In other words, if somebody wants to, well, first of all, you obviously, either organization can't continue forever out of your pocket, and if the funding pool gets dry. So what is it you need, and then how can people support you if they want to support you now? Second question is, how do people learn to pitch? It looks like that's the one thing that's common to getting money anyhow, is you got to know how to make your case. And if you have anything to say about that, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, I would say, I guess, in terms of what we need as an organization, it's really interesting. I'm finding that we don't have any projects. So for this, like, I just put out the application for the next soup in May, and I've only had one person apply so far. And so I think it's, in order for soup to sustain, it's really about community organizations getting together and talking about projects that they want to work on and may need a small startup fund for. So whether it's this organization coming together or maybe Hawaii People's Fund promoting the soup and the platform and the value added to an organization, that's definitely something that we need to continue this community initiative. I think people want to support and give. They just don't know where those outlets are. And so soup is that outlet. And so it really just needs a little bit more outreach for it to continue to sustain. And then in terms of pitching, yeah, that's interesting. You know, I was trying to piece out the demographics of each soup, because in some ways I think it's a bit of a fail-safe. If someone has a lot of friends, you just tell your friends to come to the soup and you kind of have their vote in some ways, unless there's another really compelling pitch. But I think what it really comes down to is showing that you've already started the project. So you've started the project and you're taking initiative on it without this funding. And then I think it's also about having tangible outcomes as well. So really we don't have, the funding isn't to support an organization in a whole. It's supposed to support a specific project within an organization so that there is a deliverable that the community can base the feel-good effect on. And so, I think it's mainly those two things, showing the initiative, showing that you've taken action already to date, and secondly, having some kind of tangible action that you can come back to the community and say, hey, this is what we did with the funding.
I think being able to pitch is a work in progress. So practice, amplification. Not any one person can do it. So the more people that are pitching or talking about the work that you do, the more it gets amplified out into the community. In terms of how what do we need to sustain ourselves? Well, as a foundation that gives away money, we need money in order to be able to give it away. We also have to pay rent and telephone and pay for the bookkeeper and pay salaries. And I've tried really hard to always keep those costs as low as possible so that they don't overpower our grant making. And at a certain point, it becomes a very tricky thing, because if we don't have enough money, we can scale back. But if we keep doing all the work with very little staff support, then it burns somebody out. You wouldn't know that I'm only like 35, right? But I just work so hard that I look older. So I think that we are very scalable. We had a great fortune about 9 years ago of receiving an anonymous, and truly I don't know who the donor was, gift. that we, and it was unrestricted, so we were able to just like carve away at that year after year and use it to give grants, to pay some salary, and I just was carefully stewarding it. But after all these years, we've used it up. So I'm in the process of creating our austerity budget for the next fiscal year beginning July 1, which means cutting back on things like that we can afford to cut back on that aren't fixed costs. And then we just have to do our best to raise money to meet our grant-making expectations, but to remain scalable. You know, if we have to, we can reduce staff size. We can move into somebody's garage if we have to end up doing that, but hopefully we won't come to that.
Anyway, I'd like to thank you. Our time is up. I'd like to thank you very much for coming today. I found this to be a very interesting and important conversation. And of course, thank you for all the good work that you're both doing. And thanks everybody for coming. The next meeting of Kukua Council will be in June. But in between, there's good, bad, and ugly at the state legislature. I think, is that on the 22nd? Does somebody have a 27th, Wednesday, at the state legislature? It's, the information will be on our website, kukuacouncil.org. It'll be in our newsletter. Please come to that. It's a great event at the legislature, if you can find parking. Or walk over, you know. But come, one way or the other, and we get a, we have, it's done jointly with HARA, Hawaii Alliance for Retired Americans. And every year it's very well attended, seats are all full, and we'd like to have you there. And if not, we'll see you in June back here. Thank you.